Hi, everyone. Welcome back to today's podcast. I'm so excited. I'm Jessica Stong. I'm your host here at Lives of Courage. And I want to reflect on something deeply special, personal, all over, just something that I'm truly grateful for. And it's really the lessons I've learned from my clients. I'm going to focus on that and then go into, maybe in another podcast, the lessons I've learned from my students, and really just take some time today to express the gratitude for how I feel for them and the work they've done and the things they've taught me and the work they encouraged me to do just the same. So you guys know that Lives of Courage isn't about sharing these grand acts of courage. Yes, it is. Let's be honest. But it's the small acts of courage that matters. And how do we recognize those when our brain discounts the positive and we often don't see like the journey along the way? We just see the people that are doing the great things, the Greta Thunbergs of the world, or the where did I come up with that? I'm just in awe of that young woman. But it's about recognizing that courage is like a muscle, that we have to strengthen it by practice, that it's not something that often comes naturally. It's a skill that we can learn. And I believe through the cycle of courage, right? You all know this, that I've been studying for 20 plus years. There are specific components of courage that matter. I'm not going to focus on that today. I'm just going to focus on some of the threads that I've seen in my clients' lives, in my own life, in my own journey, and what these shared journeys can teach us. So, are you ready? Here we go. I mean, my clients are the true heroes. I need you to know that I'm changing names. And my names are so boring and so vanilla, but no one can think, oh, I know who that is, because I've changed other identifying characteristics. I've tried to do my best. So I want us first to reflect on the journey. When I first began in the field of coaching and spiritual direction, I felt driven by a desire to help, to listen, to support. Yes, I felt driven by a desire to be present to my clients' lives in a way that I often couldn't before. And I have seen this done differently. I was taught the principles of therapy at a time when it wasn't the therapy we know today. So I just want to be clear about that. And I also didn't recognize the profound impact each client would have on my own life, only because I was trained so far apart. And, you know, my earliest work was working with women who had been sexually assaulted. And I saw great courage in that. And yet I didn't see great courage in myself. And I didn't realize how much those stories impacted me. We've discussed that before. And it's important to note that I don't see my clients as clients in the traditional sense. I see them as storytellers and people who are, if you're wondering, if you're watching this, I'm putting it on Do Not Disturb. They're sharing intimate stories of courage, of vulnerability, of triumph, of yes, of overcoming, but of heartbreak and pain and loss and challenges far beyond what most of us can ever see present when we look at them. And it's their hopes and their dreams and their wants, their desires, their opportunities. And that has been both enlightening and humbling that I would work with such incredible humans and get to learn from them. It taught me about the strength that is needed for someone to open up, to share vulnerably, which I now can pronounce that word, so I'm so excited, to share and show their scars, and to seek a way forward that they decide on, a way forward that they can choose. So I also want to talk about this idea of sacred space, and let me take a drink really quick. It's this really sacredness of mutual respect, of understanding, of growth, of knowing that there is a presence greater than us at work in our relationship. It's so sacred. There's been laughter. I've cried with clients. They've cried. But there is this unwavering bond of, it's trust, but it's something deeper than that. It's respect, and it's, I don't know the words. I don't have the words. Maybe I should have thought about that before I recorded said podcast. But as you know, this is an evolving art form. And this has really been a journey of growth, of evolution for me as well. With each story shared, I am overcome. I am inspired. With each challenged phase, I've learned more about the complexities of the human heart and mind and soul and what that looks like. My clients have been my teachers, guiding me towards a deeper understanding of the world, of God, of ourselves, and really a deeper understanding of empathy. From resilient moms who find strength in overcoming adversity for their kids, for themselves, what that might look like, to the young adult navigating, like trying to find a job again after being laid off, or they're at the crossroads of life, to a pastor who is beyond broken, to the lawyer who can't see a way out. Each individual has left an indelible mark on my soul. It truly. And they have reshaped my perspective of courage. They have reshaped my perspective of honor and of justice and all the words, right? I think that they have changed the makeup of how I see the tapestry of life. And so as I sit here, I am reminiscing about each of them, and you're going to hear probably a very unstructured conversation, but I wanted to share some of the profound lessons that I've learned through my clients. But I also want to acknowledge the feelings I have. I feel overcome with gratitude. Gratitude for every shared moment, every lesson learned, the privilege for playing a small part of so many beautiful journeys. So if you are a client listening to this, thank you. Thank you and thank you. Okay, so lessons I've learned. I have maybe five. I don't know. Let's see where I go with this. And I'm trying to decide, you might be watching this on the YouTubes or you might be listening to this. And I'm trying to decide whether I look at the camera and or whether I look at myself. So let's be honest. It's usually myself. Okay, so let's talk about resilience. And this is the attribute I see time and time again in my clients. I want to talk about Maya. And Maya, she faced in a single year so many crises that I couldn't, and personal losses that I was astounded that she was still standing. Her perseverance, her resilience, she found pockets of hope in the struggle, pockets of yes, positivity, but it wasn't positivity. It was joy in the depths of despair. And holding those two were just, not opposing, but opposing emotions, it was that resilience wasn't about avoiding the pain, but navigating it and knowing that these two could exist at the same time, that true joy isn't just happiness, but actual, like, what is it? Joy isn't an emotion, but a state of being. Thank you, Terry Fouché, for that. And that we find ourselves back to hope every time. And her faith was the thing that drove that resilience. And it was so beautiful to watch her navigate how she was resilient. I've had clients that don't believe in God, in a higher power, and I watch their resilience as well. And we navigate what that is and what we rely on and what it means to be in this world. So I love a good resilience conversation. And with resilience comes hope, but I want to get to that later. So pretend I didn't say that. And let's talk about empathy. Why am I putting my hands on my hips? I feel like I need to stand up and just put my hands on my hips and I want to talk about empathy. We learned about empathy in grad school, right? But to me, empathy was more, I just realized I could raise my desk so that I don't have to bend down to talk into my microphone. So here we go. Look at us go, sweet friends. So I want to talk about Matt, because to me, empathy in grad school was more akin to pity, even though we said it wasn't. I didn't fully understand empathy versus compassion versus pity, right? And I do have to say, I learned about true empathy in Soul Shepherding Spiritual Direction Training Program. And it was by their two psychologists who deeply understand empathy. And I want to talk about my lessons learned from that, just not today. So Matt came from a challenging childhood and often felt misunderstood by the people around him. Yes, society, but by his spouse, even by his children, by his congregation. And in our sessions, he poured out his feelings. He would frequently express concern for what others were going through hardships, because he so identified with that, but then wanted to push it away because it was so painful. But his innate ability to empathize, even when he was suffering, was extraordinary to me. And his ability to feel, even when it was so painful. And we talked about that and how making peace and like honoring his own pain would help him honor others' pain and not want to rush in to rescue, which I'm so good at, right? That empathy is really reaching out, feeling, understanding, and really just being present to someone else's pain. It was so beautiful. Okay, I want to talk about vulnerability, of course, and the courage that comes from needing, requiring oneself to be vulnerable. And this is a lesson I learned time and time again from my clients. It's something that I try to model here on the podcast or the YouTubes, obviously, by not being too scripted, by not re-recording. And this might be to my detriment that I don't have a polished or fancy system that I share vulnerably so that you can see that you can do it even in the mistakes and the fear and the confusion of what you're gonna share. You just share vulnerably and you just share from your heart. So I think about one story, because I've got to choose one story for each of these examples because I have countless. Sarah. Sarah was a professional and she walked into my office. I mean, you could see it in her body. She wasn't hunched over just to talk into her microphone. She was the weight of the world and her family and was on her shoulders. And this was when I did have an office. I miss having seen people in person because I could see, I can see on the Zooms, but I could see her affect. As we worked together, she slowly like took off layers. Or as I say, she was carrying that really hard backpack. Let me switch to another example. She was carrying a really heavy backpack that was forcing her to like, she was buckled by the weight of it. And as we took out each thing from an emotion coaching perspective, we got to look at her fears, her insecurities, her overwhelm, her crippling doubts about who she is and what she's capable of. As she laid bare those vulnerabilities, she was she was free of that weight. She was free of her burdens. I saw the transformation. It was so beautiful. She taught me that there's profound strength in showing up true to ourselves, in showing up even when we don't even want to speak, even when we don't even want to discuss what happened. And we're going to take each thing out of that backpack. And there is such courage in being vulnerable, in doing the work even, and seeking help. There's such vulnerability in seeking help. Okay, the power of perspective. How many have I done such thus far? Resilience, empathy, vulnerability, perspective. Oh, we've got this. Okay, I'm doing five. I want to talk about Leo. Leo had a way of seeing the world that was so inspiring that I cannot fathom. In my 20s, being able to see things the way that Leo was able to reframe circumstances and seeking the silver lining. And I'm an Enneagram 7, like I can reframe and make everything happy. But this was true. This was from a deep understanding that this is a temporary experience based on Leo's past circumstances. There was an undeniable power in his perspective and really helped me. I use that often with clients when we're working through cognitive distortions and what that can do to shift our viewpoint. Just one shift in our viewpoint can change the trajectory of our journey. How easy was that for me to say? And then finally, the importance of small steps. I can't say this enough. We all want the big changes, even me. I'm like, nothing succeeds like excess. Thank you, Oscar Wilde. I'm not going to do something if it's a small change because why bother? I see this all the time in clients, myself, not even going to say clients. I want to make rapid changes all at once. And we know in behavior change that doesn't work, but our brains decide that there is no importance in small steps. So I want to talk about Lily. Lily was a client battling severe anxiety. And Lily needed to make career changes. So each week we would show up together and I would challenge Lily to make the smallest decision, the smallest, like, in the tiniest of decisions about what she was going to do one thing this week. And her brain wanted to push her along or even, and this was someone who was super powerful in her job. And so I would intentionally not celebrate big wins. I would recognize small wins and we would celebrate those to help her rewire her brain. And so Lily taught me a lot about progress, that it's not the giant leaps. She taught me a lot about what our brains do to discount the positive. And like our brains discount small but mighty steps. And when we're consistent, what that looks like. So it's really that each client with their unique stories and experiences truly teach me They are teachers, and we don't recognize that. When we don't understand that our stories are powerful, we keep them held in. And so I think it's this resilience, it's this understanding of the human spirit, this strength. I am forever grateful for this experience. And I want to talk about this idea of if gratitude was a garden. This is too cheesy, but I love this idea that I think of each client as a flower or a cactus. You know who you are and you love it. Filling the space, the world with color, with life, with beauty. And when we walk through this garden, we pause to appreciate the essence of each plant, each flower, each bloom. And you guys know that every morning, even if I have 5 minutes, I sit with my cup of, I sit. It's the Midwestern twang. I sit with my cup of coffee and I do a lot of gratitude work. And I'm going to share this gratitude practice with you, but I was doing this just recently, as recent as today, and I thought about Alice, and I was like looking at Alice's story and looking at her as this beautiful being. She taught me the importance of unwavering hope. I told you I'd get to it, right? I have the Psychology of Hope, Making Hope Happen books, and I can study hope from a cognitive perspective. I've lived hope with a diagnosis, but Alice was living through the darkest hour. And you can guess what that might be. I'm not gonna say because then, you know. But the belief that brighter days were ahead, not in this life, but that she would one day be free of pain. And when we met, she wore sunrise. Like it was, I don't know if it was a sunrise. I've decided it could have been a sunset. We're saying it's a sunrise because that's how I picture it. And I never asked her about it, but it was that recognition of her belief. And I don't even know if she was aware of this, but her belief in hope and of new beginnings and her resilience in that daily reminder that even after the darkest night, the sun will rise. That to me is her story and how she lived and how she taught each of us. Then there's Raj, who you guys, if you're a student, you've heard me talk about him and you've heard me change his name 17 times. Was a pastor who wanted desperately to connect with his teenager. I've seen a lot of pastors, so you won't be like, oh, I know who that is. But our sessions weren't specifically coaching around communication techniques or how to have empathy for a teenager when teenagers don't like the feeling of someone providing empathy often. He would reveal his deep-seated fears about life, about everything, about God, of being not good enough, of not being worthy of love, of God's love. And his journey was powerful. His journey from doubt and pain and uncertainty and feeling disconnected. His journey was one of just acknowledging that and then moving forward and saying, this is how I feel. And I think he never had the space to do that, but also with his commitment to do the work was beyond anything I had seen, and really the internal work needed that was necessary to confront those internal really critics, demons, challenges, whatever you want to call it, the gremlins, was extraordinary. And for every story that I think about in my morning writing time, for every person as I'm walking through that garden or of life, of you might have that same visualization. These people have gifted me with stories and lessons on love and of commitment and of courage and of peace and of hope. And most importantly, the power of connection. And it's changed me forever. So in this blurred line, and some of you coaches, therapists out there might be going, I'm not ashamed to say, I blur the lines between coach and spiritual director, hence not being ICF and or on the board anymore. Oh, for other reasons too, obviously, but I want to bring everything I have. Because in the grand tapestry of life, in this garden, here I go, mixing metaphors, each of my clients teach me about wisdom and courage and inspiration. They bring it together, and my heart overflows with gratitude. They've not only enriched my personal journey, or my professional life, but my spiritual life, the way I see myself. They teach me lessons each and every single day that I think about, that I write about, that I just feel such gratitude. And it's this mutual journey of growth that we don't often talk about. In professions, it's often a one-way street where there is a mentor, a coach, a therapist imparting wisdom of what is happening in your brain or what is going on in your life. And the truth is, what I do and what a lot of coaches or my students do is far from that. It's not a one-way street. It's a dance. It's that like real relationship where both parties evolve and learn and grow. Here I am back to The Dance of Connection by Harriet Lerner. I want to illuminate the ways that my clients have enriched my journey and helping me evolve alongside them. And Paul was a veteran. I love that I get, you know, they always say you need to niche, and I have incredible clients. Paul was a veteran. That's all I'm going to say about Paul, with layers of trauma and memories that haunted him. Remember, I have done work in corporations in London and Europe, and I have done work here. I have done work all over the world. So just take that into consideration. This was not an American. As we navigated the healing work, and this was in a corporate environment, he shared stories of fear and of overwhelm that keeps coming back in his life, but also of courage, of what he called brotherhood, of sacrifice. So I want, Paul made me realize that courage isn't about facing danger on the battlefield, right? Yes, it is, of course, but it's not just that. There we go. That we have our shadow work to do, our own inner shadows, and that it has a ripple effect in every aspect of our lives, from our personal to our professional, that when we are doing corporate coaching or executive coaching, you're not just doing coaching on the surface of how to be more productive or how to be a good manager. It is deep. And the work is in choosing to move forward despite all the deep things that are happening underneath the surface. It's about healing. It's about growth. And as Paul found healing, that was the moment that I found healing for my own violence. And I just think about Paul with such gratitude. There was Elise. Well, I feel like I keep talking about all these people, but just these, and I'm at 30 minutes, so I need to stop. But it was these interactions that have shaped me, that their narratives have. I got to take a drink. Sorry, that was probably annoying. That they have come to me for coaching, but I have been forever changed by them. Their wisdom, their beauty, their humanity is so powerful. So I'm going to wrap up at 30 minutes because you know I try to keep these at 15. That's gone really well today. I want to say thank you to each client, past and present. Thank you for teaching me. And thank you for the work you do every day to become who you are truly meant to be. To enjoy this one wild and precious life. I just did two rip-offs right there, or two honors right there. You have been part of this Lives of Courage journey. You. And maybe you're listening to this and haven't understood the work that I do, and you're like, well, maybe I could do that. Just let me know. But clients, you've enriched my life in ways that words cannot capture, cannot even begin to express. So thank you. Thank you for joining me in another episode. Oh my gosh, I was supposed to say this at the beginning. If you have a story of courage, let's say you've overcome anxiety. Well, or you have fears and you don't call it anxiety, but you have lots of fears about life and your children or your job or God being real or whatever that is. I'm trying to collect stories of anxiety and who's there for you and what it means to walk through that. You can either write it out or you can schedule an interview with me. It can be 15 minutes or 45 minutes. And if it's 30 minutes and you schedule 45, we'll just be done early. You can go to my website, www.livesofcourage.com, and we can get something booked or you can fill out. I would be forever grateful. I am in the process of writing all these stories of courage and of anxiety into a book. I'm writing a book about really how we live with anxiety or fears and what that looks like. So if you are interested in helping a gal out, I would be forever grateful. Okay, sweet friends, I love you all. Thank you for this listening to this long, winding road that we had today. Thank you, clients. Thank you, listeners. I love you all. Have a great and courageous week, sweet friends. See you soon.